You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Well, a few of the busiest sports days of the entire year are upon us. NBA, NHL playoffs. We got the Heat and Celts tipping off as we speak. A full slate of baseball. And, of course, we are 25 hours away. The Bears going on the clock. This is Amber and Ian on ESPN Radio, ESPN app. I'm Aaron Goldhammer, and he is the 46th pick in the 2011 NFL Draft. Orlando Franklin, offensive tackle, Miami, with us on the show tonight. We are presented by Progressive Insurance. Big O, I know a dream come true for a lot of kids over the next couple of days. It has to bring back some great memories for you when you made your NFL debut and finally had your goal of making it to the NFL accomplished back in 2011.
Yeah, first of all, it feels like a lifetime ago. Hey, you just started talking about it, AG, and I got a little bit of goosebumps, but it feels like it was so long ago. I'm going into now my seventh year of retirement now after playing 7 years in the NFL. So just unbelievable opportunities these young men have going into this long weekend for them when this is what they prayed about, they've thought about ever since they started playing football, and that dream is going to become a reality this weekend. So I remember how it felt. I know what these guys are going through. And now is when the real work starts, because people think that you get drafted and it's like, oh, my goodness gracious, I get to take my foot off the gas pedal. Nope, you're going to be in rookie minicamp here in a couple days. So this is when the fun actually gets started, though, and you know exactly where you're going to go and you can start studying those playbooks.
We will get to all the rumors and everything coming up. But, Orlando, I just want to walk down memory lane with you for a minute. It was an odd year. I remember you telling me the story of your draft, in part because the NFL was about to go or already was in the throes of a lockout, right, in 2011 when you were selected. What do you remember most about those couple of days, and how weird was it to sort of be joining a league that wasn't really even in action, as I remember?
I remember just asking my agent, okay, what does this mean? Like, when are we getting paid? You know, I came from a situation, AG, that was just not the best, right? My single mom working to, you know, two jobs to put me and my brother through school and just to provide for us. So I remember as the draft was getting ready to happen, I knew I was one of those day one guys. I was going to be either a first round pick or maybe I might squeak into the second round, depending on, you know, how two teams viewed me. But my biggest thing was, when do we get the money? Because we didn't have these NIL deals when I was in college, when I was coming out in 2011.
Sure.
So
sure.
I was thinking about, like, when does that happen? Because the league's not certified and we don't know if there's going to be a year this year. You know, can they touch the signing bonus? Can they touch the salary? Or so those were my questions, because I just had a lot of people that were relying on me. And it was like, I'm getting drafted, but there was like five or six other people that were getting drafted as well.
Right.
For sure.
How bitter were you that you weren't a first round pick?
A little salty, but I also understood the situation. You know, that's the good thing that the NFL and the NFLPA, they have these agents put in play. And if you get a good agent, he could set realistic expectations for
you.
My agent happened to be Drew Rosenhaus. When I was coming in 2011, Drew had 150 plus clients in the National Football League.
Sure.
I could sit there and tell him, hey, tell me who the GM is for the Raiders. And he'll tell me the GM. And then I'd say, hey, tell me who the starting offensive line is for the Raiders. And he'd go from left tackle all the way to right tackle.
Yeah.
And that really put my mind at ease, because I was able to talk to him about a lot of different things. So going into the draft, I knew that there was probably about a 40% chance of me going in the first round, but it was high with the second round because I had some issues happen in school where got in trouble, you know, just being an 18-year-old kid outside of mom and dad's house for the first time.
Sure.
So there was a little bit of character thing.
Well, and it's not like you got put in a situation, you know, you were at the U, so you weren't exactly in a place where it was hard to get into trouble. If I was 18 and I was at the U and I was playing football, I guarantee you I wouldn't be hosting ESPN Radio with you right now. Obviously got selected to a good place with the Denver Broncos, got to go to a Super Bowl, got to play with one of the all-time greats in Peyton Manning, And I know a lot of players are hoping, not just Orlando, that they get selected, but and how high they get picked, I think sometimes is overrated. And I think what's underrated is the situation that you go to, especially for these quarterbacks that we're going to be talking about tonight. I mean, I would rather go with a good, solid coach and a great, rather than go 5 or 7 picks higher. I think the situation is proven out. You know, if Patrick Mahomes had gone to the Chicago Bears, would he be the quarterback that he is today? I'm not doubting him, but probably not. Like, going to Andy Reid and Alex Smith was a pretty good situation for him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no doubt. You know, I think in today's society, AG, what we got to look at is so many times we're told to, hey, you know, you got to be this tough guy. You got to be this tough person.
Yeah.
And if you don't get drafted into the right situation, especially at the quarterback position, you could get you could literally just roll over. Nothing could happen. Nothing good could happen for you. Uh-huh. You end up like a Andrew Luck that retires early. That retires out of nowhere. I'll tell you why that young man retired. His body was beat up.
Yeah.
It took forever to fix that offensive line. So you look at a Patrick Mahomes that goes out there for his rookie year and gets to sit behind Alex Smith. That was the best thing that ever happened. He was able to learn and develop where his ego and his from the neck up was not broken. It wasn't battered. It wasn't bruised. It was, hey, you know, you're not the person that we're relying on from day one, and you saw the success. And the reason why I mentioned this is just because of in today's society, you know, we have freedom of speech. We have the right to be everything, but it doesn't shape up to be this person that's so emotionally tough or mentally tough. Uh-huh. Like you're really molded to be like, hey, however you feel, preach how you feel. But when you walk into an NFL locker room, you're supposed to be the toughest you know what in the world. But so there's that push. We got to find that common ground. And at the quarterback position,
yeah,
I think that's why we see so much struggle to find that guy.
Yeah.
Because not often do you pair the guy with the right situation. And
yes,
the right situation is everything.
I agree. Brock Purdy, the expectations weren't sky high for Mr. Irrelevant. And he got to go in with a great set of circumstances. Awesome coaches. Tremendous offensive line. Best left tackle in the league. Great group of wide receivers. And all that, look, I'm not taking anything away from him. He's one of the best players in the league now. Mm-hmm. But do I think that if Brock Purdy had gone somewhere else that he would be a Super Bowl quarterback? I don't know. It happens to – his situation plays a role in it. Amber and Ian, I'm Aaron Goldhammer. He's Orlando Franklin on ESPN Radio, ESPN app. All right, biggest news of the NFL moment I want to get to with you, Orlando, which is that multiple big-name players for the Cincinnati Bengals – are requesting trades on the day before the draft. T. Higgins, we already knew, was trying to get out of his franchise tag situation there. And now Trey Hendrickson, who's the best player on the Bengals who nobody really knows, who's one of the best pass rushers in the NFL, requested a trade tonight, one day before the draft, according to ESPN's Adam Schefter. Hendrickson looking for more long-term security despite reworking his deal less than a year ago. And it feels to me, we know Mike Brown's reputation as one of the cheaper owners in the NFL. And now that they have broken the bank for Joe Burrow, it feels like the core in Cincinnati, there's a little bit of tension here going on. What do you read into this situation, Orlando?
Yeah, Mike Brown, what's wrong with you? What are you doing? There's that luxury tax that you have to pay. You've been in a Super Bowl within the last half a decade. You got this Joe Burrow that is a special player, but he needs the pieces that are around him. I think Trey is exactly what you just said, AG. He is a superstar that's unheard of. A lot of people don't know him because he's a defensive lineman, but he is what makes that defense go. And a couple years ago, when there was a lot of different weak holes and weak spots on that defense, he was one of those constant guys that put pressure on the quarterback, that made the quarterback make mistakes in trying to, you know, push the ball down the field. So when I start looking at a guy like T. Higgins, if he's in 31 other teams in the National Football League, he's already paid.
Yeah.
And look at Trey as well. The same exact situation. It all points to the GM, and the GM's got to fix himself because a lot of people are going to say, yeah, you don't want to come play here for this guy. You're never going to get paid.
I think they have some tough decisions coming, Orlando. I don't think that they're going to go into the season with both Higgins and Hendrickson on the team. Mm-hmm. I think they got to pay Chase. Obviously, they picked up his fifth-year option today. They know that's coming. And they have to prioritize the best players at the scarcest positions. And if you're going to pay Chase, makes sense to me to trade T. Higgins. Part of the other thought there is you could trade him to a team that's looking for a receiver in a receiver deep draft, and then you can reset the clock on another rookie who's coming into the NFL, maybe not as polished. That might, to me, be the route I would go, because I think Trey Hendrickson, even though he doesn't have as big a name, he doesn't have as many commercials, he didn't go to Clemson, he's not, you know, he doesn't have the sizzle. I think he's a more important player to what the Bengals do than T. Higgins is. Harder to replace.
Yeah, absolutely. But there's so many different ways to manipulate this salary cap. T. Higgins, we give him a massive signing bonus, and we only guarantee 2 years of the deal, right? Mm-hmm. So you can put it on paper that it's a four-year deal like what we saw Amon St. Brown get today, right? 77 guaranteed, $120 million, making 30 a year. So you could give him that type of deal, knowing that in 2 years when Ja'Marr Chase is up and picking up his fifth-year option, when you got to back up the Brinks truck, now T. Higgins is done at that point.
Yeah.
With a guy like Trey on the defensive side of the ball, let's get some incentives out there. Let's get some sacks. Let's get a little bit more guaranteed money from 2025, 2026.
Yeah.
Not like back up the Brinks truck guarantee. He's already shown that he's willing to work with the team, taking restructuring a couple years ago.
And he has delivered, 39 and a half sacks over the course of the last 3 years, made the Pro Bowl every year that he's been in Cincinnati. He's done everything. It's just you see like when that report card from the players comes out, who's got the worst facilities, some of the worst facilities in the NFL. The Bengals do. You know, I see their practice field as I'm driving across the bridge from Kentucky back into the state of Ohio. And I can tell you there's a reason why. And players talk about this kind of stuff. They don't have a great reputation for spending money. Like, that's just known fact around the NFL. And now with a franchise QB who's on his second contract and a franchise wide receiver, all this for the Bengals is coming to a head. And I think there's going to be drama, not just here before the draft. I see this stretching all the way, Orlando, into training camp for them. Up next, there are rumors flying all over the place. I have collected them. Orlando is going to respond to them as we are one day away from the draft. Amber and Ian, Aaron Goldhammer, Orlando Franklin on ESPN Radio and on the ESPN app.
10 seconds on the clock. How many things can you name that are always growing? Your relationships, your skills, your customer base. How about businesses on Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/network, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/network now to grow your business. No matter what stage you're in, shopify.com/network.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPN pods. That's amazon.com/ESPN pods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I don't know whether to take rumors that come out the day before the draft more seriously or less seriously, but there is a lot zooming around the NFL. Let's just say my cell phone battery is down to 19%, and usually it's at about 50% at this point in the day. Amber and Ian's on ESPN Radio, the ESPN app. I'm Aaron Goldhammer. He is Orlando Franklin. We are presented by Progressive Insurance. Get a business insurance quote online as little as 6 minutes. You go to progressivecommercial.com. That is progressivecommercial.com. Orlando, I've got five big rumors the day before the NFL draft. I want you to react to each one. Let me know whether you're buying or selling the rumor, and let's get it started.
Number one.
All right, number one involves J.J. McCarthy. Now, there's been some crazy stuff that's a little hard to believe about the Chargers. We'll get to that in a second. But I do believe there is a world in which he's the third quarterback off the board and Drake May is the guy that falls. That's been out there. It's being talked about by the league sources. You buy it, Orlando, that J.J. McCarthy could be the third QB and not Drake May?
No. I can't buy it. I think J.J. McCarthy is going to be a heck of a player in the National Football League. But when I look at Drake May, I just think that Drake's a little bit more ready for the moment right now. And I know a little bit more about Drake May than I do know about J.J. McCarthy. They had that great offensive line out there in Michigan. They had that running game going. I just don't see him as a quarterback that's going to be able to dice up a defense. And, you know, hey, you got to go win this for us. We have no timeouts left. We need a 15-play drive right now, and we're going to put it all on your shoulders, and you're going to pull this out for us. I don't see that for J.J. McCarthy. I just see Drake May being able to do that.
Orlando, I'm in Buckeye country, where the last 3 years, Michigan has beaten Ohio State. And never once did I hear a Buckeye fan say, uh-oh, we're in trouble in this game because we're going up against J.J. McCarthy. Did they say we're going up against the Michigan defensive and offensive lines that are bigger and tougher than we are? Yes. Did Ohio State get pushed around in those games? Yes. I think J.J. McCarthy might be a fine QB, but I think he was in part a product. He was in part a product. Do I acknowledge the song by him? Of the great Michigan team, are the Hail to the Victors squad that led him to the national championship, and really not the other way around. Let's get to the next one.
Number two.
All right, number two involves the Patriots. They are at three, and it feels like they're in a bit of the catbird seat here in this draft, Orlando. Do you buy the rumors about the Patriots trading down?
Trading down isn't back, right? Not to 1-2, right?
Yes, yes.
Absolutely, absolutely. New head coach. We're not doing it the Bill Belichick way anymore. I think that when you're sitting at three, that is the perfect opportunity to get multiple picks while still just trading back right into the middle of the first round. So you're still going to get a good quality player, but now you have that opportunity to really have turnover with your roster. So yes, absolutely, 100%.
We're talking about teams in this draft giving up multiple number ones to move up for quarterbacks or to acquire veteran quarterbacks. Well, Linda, one of the things that sticks out to me, the Patriots don't have to give up extra picks to take Drake May at three. And they don't have to give up extra collateral. They don't have to give him a $200 million contract. They're up there at the top. All they have to do is hand in the card. And I think ultimately that is what they are going to do. I know they need a lot. I know it's a whole new era there. But I think it starts with the quarterback, not ends with the quarterback. And I think they're going to stay there and take Drake May. Let's go to the next one.
Number three.
Amber and Ian on ESPN Radio, Aaron Goldhammer, Orlando Franklin. We're going through the top five rumors as we get closer and closer to the NFL draft. And this has been a wild one all day about the Chargers taking a quarterback. At number five, Adam Schefter, ESPN NFL Insider, was on Sportsmanlike earlier today. Could Jim Harbaugh fall in love with his quarterback from Michigan and select J.J. McCarthy, Schefty?
They're not drafting J.J. McCarthy. They're not drafting J.J. McCarthy. Now, could somebody trade into five to draft J.J. McCarthy? If that's the bet, yeah, that's possible. Absolutely. But the Chargers have Justin Herbert. The new money in Justin Herbert's contract has not kicked in. They can't trade Justin Herbert. So they're not drafting J.J. McCarthy as the first pick to create a controversial situation in L.A. about who they should start as quarterback when they've drafted a franchise quarterback in Justin Herbert and he's the guy.
You heard Schefty there, Orlando, referring to the odds, which went way down. They were like 100-1 on them taking a quarterback at five, and now this morning it was like 6-1 that you could get if you're betting on ESPN bets. So what do you make of these rumors surrounding Harbaugh and the Chargers?
If Harbaugh was to take J.J. McCarthy, I would be looking for Ashton Kutcher, because if I'm the Spanos family, we must be getting punked, right? This makes absolute no sense. I get it. You might be in love with J.J. McCarthy. You might have told that young man that he's going to be the next Peyton Manning in the National Football League. But here's the end all be all. He hasn't done it at the top level. In the NFL, it's not like college. College, you might see three blitzes, AG, all game. In the NFL, you could see three blitzes on first, second, and third down, just back to back. Justin Herbert has proven that he's able to scan the defense, put the ball where he's supposed to put the ball. Yeah. J.J. McCarthy has not proven that. Jim Harbaugh would be insane to take a unproven product and now say, hey, come on, I'm going to start all over and try to win with you at this level.
Next!
Number four.
All right, number four, Orlando involves the Minnesota Vikings, and they've been in on a possible quarterback for a while. They acquired another first-round pick in a trade earlier this offseason with the Houston Texans. So were you buying the notion that the Vikings are going to be really aggressive here tomorrow night? They're going to move up and try to grab the replacement for Kirk Cousins.
100%, especially with just how the Vikings season went last year. Remember, that was the Minnesota Vikings under year two of that coaching staff. They were thinking, man, we got some high hopes. And at the start of the year, it wasn't going too well. Talking to some members of that coaching staff, and a lot of people were worried about job security. So I think they're going to be very aggressive tomorrow night to get their quarterback of the future, that quarterback that they don't have to pay a lot of money because you're going to have to back up like three Brinks trucks when it comes to Justin Jefferson, right? So you got to go get that quarterback where you could keep him under a reasonable contract for the next 5 years by picking up his fifth-year option.
All right, let's get to our final rumor.
Number five.
All right, number five is about the Vegas Raiders. I think one of the most interesting teams in this draft. Apparently, they're also thinking aggressive either for a quarterback or for a receiver. I'll say this, Orlando, that they have Gardner Minshew there who they could play, but I think that team needs some buzz and sizzle, and I think Mark Davis is feeling it a little bit.
Yeah, absolutely. When you look at just that Raiders organization, right, I just never could get behind them when it comes to the draft because they've messed it up a lot over the years. So I think they got to go get that big splash. You got to go get that city excited. So if you could go get a quarterback, you have to go get your quarterback of the future as well.
I think it's going to be a wild, unpredictable. I know that's not but it's going to be one of the more unpredictable draft nights ever, I think, tomorrow night. Up next, his Heisman Trophy is back, and he's in the Heisman house. Amber and Ian on ESPN Radio and the ESPN app.
We all know breakfast is an important part of your day, but sometimes when you're traveling for business, you end up staying at a hotel that doesn't offer any. You know what happens? You grab a cup of coffee and skip the meal entirely. We've all been there. But if you book a room at La Quinta by Wyndham, you can enjoy their free Bright Side breakfast featuring delicious baked goods, fruit, eggs, yogurt, and waffles. And really, who doesn't want to start their day with a fresh hot waffle? Tonight, La Quinta, tomorrow you shine. Book direct at LQ.com.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sports book bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
Well, they took it away for 14 years, and it's about darn time that they returned it. Amber and Ian's on ESPN Radio, ESPN app, Sirius XM Channel 80. I'm Aaron Goldhammer with Orlando Franklin, Reggie Bush. Today, finally, you know, they applied pressure, and suddenly this scandal doesn't come with the same level of taboo that it used to. And Reggie Bush is a Heisman Trophy winner. Orlando, like, I'm trying to rewrite history on this stuff. He's one of the great college football players that I could ever remember. And I'm glad that finally this fall we'll be able to watch him in a freaking Heisman House commercial.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, finally it's happening. Reggie Bush, you didn't take away from his play, you know, and for him to have to lose an award because of certain things that were happening off the field, I don't necessarily think it should have ever been stripped because of that. Because guess what? Were there still a bunch of kids saying that they want to be like Reggie Bush when he gets older? Yes. Were there still people saying that that guy had so much impact on the game? Yes. Were there still people that still talk about that USC-Texas game? Yes. And that's because of Reggie Bush and what he was able to do out there. He was a spectacular talent. He changed the mind. I wanted to play running back. I was just too big. You know, like I couldn't lose the weight to get in that position.
Well, listen, there was such hypocrisy in this. I mean, the Heisman Trust, the people at USC, the NCAA, they all benefited off of Reggie Bush being such a great player there. Okay, so God forbid he take, and I don't even know how much it was or when it was, but to me, the way that our society works, like he was entitled to a bunch of this. And I understand, look, they had to deal with sanctions and they had to deal with scholarships. And really, I could argue the USC football program's kind of never been the same since they went through this scandal. But to pin all that on Reggie Bush's career, who was the best player in college football those years? Who was the guy you didn't want the ball handed off to, catching it out of the backfield, or returning it on a punt? The other thing that he'll always be known for, to me, the Bush push has now become the Tush push. Mm-hmm. And it's like one of the iconic plays in football history, is it not? Like, you have to acknowledge this stuff, whether he took improper benefits or not. Reggie Bush is a part of college football history. It should not be this complicated. The other piece of this, Orlando, there are other Heisman Trophy winners that, like, weren't the best guys ever and did some not nice things. Like,
didn't
you know, I don't know.
Didn't we watch the Menzel story that came out a couple months ago? Right. What was anybody doing?
did anybody go and look at the OJ 30 for 30 that I think is available both on ESPN Plus and on Netflix? Like, you know, they're not taking away those guys' Heisman trophies, but they're taking away Reggie Bush's. You brought up Manziel. I actually think that he had a key role in this, Orlando, because I think when the Heisman is like a club, and when one of those members, say what you want about Johnny, he's also a beloved college football figure.
Yes.
When he comes out and is as vocal as he was about Reggie, I think that affected ultimately and pushed this decision through.
Everybody should have been, though, in my opinion, because when you look at college athlete knows how hard it is. Now, I'm not going to sit here and cry you a river, AG. I'm just not. But when I got to the University of Miami, coming there, my mom had to, you know, scrape everything together. We didn't have a college fund growing up, and that's just the harsh reality. Now, I was able to move from Toronto to South Florida after my sophomore year, so my mom was able to do certain other things to help me out.
Yeah.
But I was going to University of Miami without a car, didn't have an iPad, didn't have, you know, the fridge in the room and all these different things. My mom had to work towards these things.
Yeah.
And when you have a lot of different guys that come from some different situations, different backgrounds, and you get to certain schools – they're not just going to walk away from, you know, that $100. They're looking at that $100 and saying, man, I could go to the movies with that. I could go on a date with that.
Yeah.
I could go do other things because I wasn't allowed to work when I was at the University of Miami. When was I going to work? I was putting in 40 hours a week into football. From the time I woke up in the morning, we practiced at 5:30.
Yeah.
I started class at 9 a.m. I went from class at 9 a.m. all the way to 1 p.m. Then we had afternoon meetings. Then I had an afternoon class. Then I had 2 hours of study hall.
Yeah.
My whole day was spent. I was spent, 17 hours each and every day at the facility or on campus. I could not work.
Right.
So to just be taking the Heisman away, and does it get a little excessive? Yeah, I guess it did back in the day, but what world are we living in now with these NILs? And we knew that this was always coming.
I think so, and I don't think anybody really was ever that appalled by Reggie Bush getting some money under the table when he was one of the most famous athletes in the country. Amber and Ian on ESPN Radio, the ESPN app. I'm Aaron Goldhammer with Orlando Franklin. Obviously, you know, he's maintained a very high profile. You know, he's on Fox's college football coverage. But I'm curious about the trophy because the way the story is written here, Orlando, correct me if I'm wrong, but did they confiscate the trophy? And if so, where has the trophy been for the last 14 years? Like, is there a story to be told about the back storage room at the where is this trophy gone? Is it the same one that he originally held up that night? Like, is there anything in your football life, Orlando, that might illuminate some light on where Reggie Bush's Heisman has been all this time? Because literally the story is written like, okay, they're going to give it back, but they've been holding it hostage where?
is there a NCAA Hall of Fame somewhere?
There's a college football Hall of Fame that I think is in South Bend, Indiana, where Notre Dame is.
That would be the perfect place for it, right? I
mean, they had it just in a storage room, locked up, like it was like the Ark of the Covenant in the Indiana Jones and the Raiders of the Lost Ark. Like, it's, you know,
I bet what actually happened. I bet they got it and it was just like, okay, cool, no problem, here we go, and probably tossed it. I don't think that anybody really cared for it at that point because
they were removing it. You think it got thrown out? And they had to remake a new Heisman Trophy? We've got to get to the bottom. This is the part of this story that I'm actually most fascinated in, is where the trophy has been.
It wouldn't shock me, though. Like, who else was going to – Are you going to take Reggie Bush's Heisman Trophy and take it, bring it home with you, and like, put it up on the mantle?
If you're the head of the Heisman Trust or the NCAA Commission on Infractions, like you put it on your coffee table, like you won the Heisman Trophy. I mean, maybe that's the move.
Yeah, and then the
neighbors come over. It's like the cool thing, you know. Is it Reggie Bush? No, it's really my Heisman Trophy. It is some stuff that's wrong. It was up for grabs, and now I went ahead and grabbed it. It will be cool to see him. Two things. One, the Heisman is a fraternity, you know, those commercials that they run in the fall, for him to be a part of all that's going to be great. But I think one of the coolest moments is at the ceremony every December that all the previous Heisman winners go up on that stage, and it means so much to guys that are currently playing in the NFL, to guys whose careers are long be gone, that they'll always be a part of that club and they'll always be there, and that they excluded Reggie Bush from that more so than a hunk of metal. I think that probably means more to Reggie Bush, if I was in his shoes, it would, than anything else.
Yeah, the appearances, being able to go to different things and say, hey, you know what, I'm a part of this elite group. You know, I tell people all the time, AG, I've been on with you before I said it. I'd give 3-4 fingers for a Super Bowl ring. Yeah. I got the Super Bowl 48, but never won it, right?
Yeah.
And that's an elite group in itself. That what, from just being in that group to the revenue that you're able to make from being on a Super Bowl team, all the different things that happen over the years, that hey, we're going to come back and have this ceremony, this reunion, all these different things. And it's the same thing for the Heisman, but even more exclusive. Right. So yeah. And each and every year they drew in things and the commercials that come out and, hey, Reggie, you got to take a seat on and miss out on these different opportunities and these different, you know, maybe you could make a little bit of more money for appearances or whatever the case may be, where now he's back in that club. So I'm just happy that they were able to kind of flip it back and he's getting his trophy back. And even though I think they still made it. They made a new one? They just said, hey, you know what? Reggie's getting back his Heisman. We're going to need to get that one made back again, and, hey, we're going to mail it out.
So then does someone have a Heisman Trophy that didn't win the Heisman Trophy, but they just are, like, friends with the guy that makes them, and so they made him one, like, for his birthday or something? Like, if I was the Heisman Trust, I would make one of these a year, and I would have locked up that Reggie Bush Heisman if the day eventually came that it was reinstated, that I would want the same trophy that he had on that December night in 2005 returned to him at his home exactly the way that he left it when they took it out of his cold hands in 2010. NBA update. How about this? Heat at the end of the first quarter have a 28-27 lead on the Celtics. Jason Tatum off to a hot start. He's got 14 points, but Boston behind at TD Garden at the end of one. They have a 1-0 lead. Coming up next, the 76ers are maybe some of the biggest crybabies in all of sports. This is Amber and Ian on ESPN Radio and on the ESPN app.
Now, let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavy on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue and ready for the play. And boom! Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good! The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and tequila season. Hypnotic Liqueur, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
All right, Joel Embiid. Like, yes, you guys got a couple of bad breaks. But in the NBA playoffs, you make your own luck. Amber and Ian's on ESPN Radio, ESPN app. I'm Aaron Goldhammer. He's Orlando Franklin. We are in for the crew tonight. We are presented by Progressive Insurance. Orlando, I don't know that there is a sports team that I know in the world that whines and complains hey guys, why don't you get a defensive rebound and stop relying on officials to call fouls for you at the end of a game that you never should have lost in a million years? It's not their fault. It's not my fault. Orlando, it's not your fault. The Sixers are the ones to blame for the fact that they choked away game two.
And every year it's something new with them. Remember last year, Embiid holding out, and then all of a sudden he gets named the MVP, and he's like, I'm back with the leg injury. And then, what, in the playoffs he's not playing, but then he goes and they get blown out last year as well. So it's always complaining about something. How about you just lace it up and play basketball?
Yeah.
You have no business losing a game. Don't even make it that close. Don't even allow the refs to be able to make a call or miss a call in that situation.
Right. And Kyle Lowry's got to have enough awareness, you know, after Brunson makes the first three to call timeout, which he did not. And then after DiVincenzo misses, there are four Sixers standing next to the basket, ready to get the rebound. And Isaiah Hartenstein goes straight up Moses Malone and just goes through all of them because he wants the ball more. Orlando, I have respect for the Knicks. I don't think they're going to win the title. But I'll tell you what, with their coach and their attitude, they maximize every ounce of talent that they have as a team. They understand their culture. They know who they are. They have an identity. The Sixers have an identity, too. It's filing grievances against the NBA as if some judge is going to come from the Supreme Court to rule that you actually won game two when the Knicks deserved to win it and they went ahead and did.
Yeah. You know, I'm going to use a hockey analogy right here. You know, in hockey, how you get that greasy goal where you got a couple guys out there in the crease and you're kind of screening the goaltender and one just squeaks right by and gets in the back of the net.
Yeah.
The Knicks are built to play greasy.
Yeah.
That's how they're built. They're going to say, hey, we're going to muff it up and we're just going to go out here. We're going to give you everything that we have, but we're not going to back down. When I look at the 76ers now, I look at a different mentality of that basketball team where it's, hey, you know, we're superstars and we're going to go out here and we're going to win. They got to get to that greasy mentality in order to be able to string together some games and really try to take this thing far into the postseason.
I mean, I think their culture is whining and complaining. It's what Daryl Morey has pulled off some great trades there and has been a good executive there. I'll give him plenty of credit for that. They got rid of the Ben Simmons situation. That's been a mess in Brooklyn, obviously. But when it comes to submitting grievance letters and writing stern memos to the, you know, you got to have accountability in any good culture in order to understand where things went wrong and to really be able to get better. And you are so right. It is always something. It's never, hey, we didn't play well enough on us. We're going to be better in game three. This series is a long way from over. No, it's complain to the refs. It's file a grievance. It's I called timeout. It's I was fouled. It's my jersey was grabbed. And that's no way, not only to handle sports, that's no way to be in life.
Yeah. Whenever you look at sports, and this is, I think it holds true all the way down to Little League, whether you're playing, you know, T-ball, baseball, you always got to look at the culture. What is the culture of that team? What is culture, you know, is a direct with when you look at the culture, now you talk about the identity as well. And when I look at the 76ers, I think that, you know, they had an opportunity to be that team, but I think it really all started with James Harden. Mm-hmm. And when Harden got there and them, the things that he was doing to that organization and how he was acting. And now you have other players on that basketball team that say, oh, I could do that as well. Oh, that's acceptable here. And now your culture gets screwed up when guys start thinking that that's how we work. That's how we attack things. And the reason why I say that is because when I got drafted to the Broncos had the second overall pick. In 2011, they got Von Miller. That was their pick, right? They were a 4-12 football team. But yet, I still got brought into a great culture. You're from here, AG. You grew up here in Colorado.
Yes.
I remember fans screaming at me saying, yo, Big Franklin, 4-12 is not good enough. We expect to win the division every single year. And I'm like, dude, I never had anything to do with that. But the fan base was letting me know from day one that they're not going to play around, and there's high expectations for this football team. Now, you mix that with going in and having these strong character guys of Brandon Lloyd, a Champ Bailey, DJ Williams, and now these things are demanded out of me. I have to grow up right now, and I'm that culture. It becomes who I am because I'm able to live it each and every day.
Yeah.
When you have a young player like Joel Embiid looking at an older player like James Harden and saying, oh, that's what we could get away with, and, oh, we're allowed to do these different things. And it's no wonder to me that we hear James Harden or Joel Embiid carry on the way that he carries on.
Yeah.
And that's because he learned from somebody, in my opinion.
And I didn't like him hanging his head either. You know, Nick Nurse, the vibes around the Sixers – it's hard for me to read whether they're still, after this devastating loss in this series, no team has won on the road yet in that series. We all know no NBA playoff series starts until team wins on the road. Here's Nick Nurse at the podium after the game, after the Sixers' devastating defeat.
Like, stuff happens, right? I mean, again, been in a lot of games and stuff happens. I thought we played really well. I thought we played well enough to win. Obviously, we, you know, the closing seconds of the game cost us the game. However it went down, it went down. There's nothing's going to change that now. If there's some stuff we could do better, yes, we want to discuss those things, but just get started watching the film about other adjustments and other things that we needed to get ready for in this long series.
There you go. I thought by the time he got – this was actually – I misspoke. It was from earlier today. By the time they got into today, there's a little bit of a renewed focus on Game 3, which I like. I'll give them credit there for that. Orlando, I'm curious how this game is going to be officiated in the wake of a big officiating controversy. Do you think the Sixers get a bunch of calls in Game 3 tomorrow night?
No, I think this referee crew is going to come out there and honestly say, okay, we're going to call it hard. We're not just going to go out here and let you guys play. We will call ticky-tack fouls. We're going to call everything that we see because this is now a organization that is complaining and saying that we're the reason why they lost a basketball game that they should win. And I think it's because of the ownership. I think it's because of the head coach. I think it's because of the players as well. When you have all three levels kind of laying their hat on this thing saying that this is the reason why we lost and this has to be better, I really believe that this referee staff, I would be pissed off about it if I was the refs. I just went through 82 games during the regular season and I was put together an all-star crew in order to referee these games in the postseason. So I think that, you know, it's an overcompensation now where we see a lot of calls tomorrow night.
I think that it better be a veteran crew, and I think that that crowd in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania is going to be all over every time the whistle blows. That's going to be a sight to see in and of itself when that Game 3 happens in Philly tomorrow night. One other note here, you know, the NBA went back and told the Sixers essentially sorry because they came out with a last 2-minute report that acknowledged that they missed some things. I mean, I don't know. To me, those things were not blatantly obvious, horrible mistakes. Obviously, it upset Philadelphia. There's no like accountability for this, though. It's not like the officials get punished or we get to go back. And it's basically like a I'm sorry, but. And to me, it's really odd. If I was the NBA, I'd get rid of these last 2-minute reports. Really strange, Orlando.
Yeah, I definitely. It's not something that for me that I hang my hat on. I just believe that there's a feel of everything. Remember, I played offensive line. I held every single play. There's always something going on that people don't like. It's just, do you do it smart enough where your team is not penalized for it?